everyone. Welcome all. Step right up. Step right up, ladies and gentlemen. Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 153. When you are calm, at peace. Howdy, everybody. Portal Gaming Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, and it's a podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal, which is located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can log on to www.theportalct.com. You can check us out on Facebook, The Portal, and on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. That is where you will find me, your host for this episode, The Brant. And with me is...
your co-host, Kathy.
Woohoo! Woohoo! As we would say. Yay! Kathy lives with me. And I live with her. And it's been tricky to get on the podcast.
Yeah.
Craziness.
It's true. So,
how are things going, Kat?
They're going.
Yeah?
Here we are. Still here.
Tell the people what you've been doing.
I've played a bunch of games.
Nice.
Recently.
Awesome.
I work from home still. Hang out with my kid. Those sorts of things.
Sounds like quarantine.
Does it?
Yeah. Nice. I do all those things minus school now.
Yep.
Not that you said that, but I'm just saying.
Yeah.
And then plus going to the portal a day or two a week.
It's true.
That's it. Other than that, yeah, it's the same. But we have played a whole bunch of games.
We have.
So that's been really neat. So, awesome. This is episode 153. It's a review episode. So, last episode you listened to me talk about 30 games I played in May, and I'll be doing the same thing for the next episode for games played in June and rank them, put them in order to help people out. So, yeah, so this half of the episode is going to be with Kathy. We're going to review two games. What do we got here, Kath?
We have Shadows of Killforth and Tang Garden.
And then the second half of the episode will be with your co-host Larry, and we're going to review Sky Tear from PvP Geeks, and we're going to review Gloomhaven, Jaws of the Lion. Really wanted to have Larry on that one because Kathy, you and I are already well-versed in Gloomhaven. We played the other day.
We did.
Our big box, and we're like, I don't know, 55 scenarios in. So
yeah.
Us reviewing the new one is just kind of like, hey. So I wanted somebody who's stepping into that world for the first time.
Right.
To give us a review. So we'll talk about that one in the second half. And as I always say, shorter episode, and then it turns into 50 minutes. So one of us talks a lot. That's the issue.
Weird.
Awesome. Let's jump right in. So the first game we have here is Shadows of Killforth. This is from Hall or Nothing Productions, and it's designed by Tristan Hall. Tristan was nice enough to send us over a copy so we could check this out. This is a follow-up to Gloom of Killforth, which I have not played. Have you played Gloom of Killforth?
I have not.
Nor have I. And so this is a fantasy quest game, as it says. And first, I think the first place to start is the production. The art is gorgeous.
Yeah,
I absolutely
really
love the art. There's definitely a gloom or a darkness to it, but not so dark that that's what it is.
Right.
It's like you have all these adventure land cards that you lay out on the table, like a 5x5 grid, and they turn to gloom, but it's not like, oh, it's all dark and goth and crazy.
A lot of them are actually quite beautiful and peaceful.
Right. Yeah, at night there's nothing there. So... and then you have some standees. They're really nice, though. They're thick. They're durable. I don't need minis in a game like this, so standees work perfectly fine. And the art on those are really nice.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you doing in Shadows of Killforth? So essentially, it's an adventure game, and you're running around this area. Like I said, a 5x5 grid. And you're trying to complete your personal story. Right? So you got a personal story that you want to run through. It's got... can you help me remember? Is it four or five chapters?
I think five.
Five chapters. And then there's an ancient one.
Four.
Or an ancient. Yeah. I think it's five. There's a, there's like an interlude, so...
yeah.
Can't argue, but... and then there's an ancient one that you need to destroy once you've completed your story. So in competitive mode, which we played, it's like a race. The first one to do that, finish their story, and then Slay the Ancient wins the game. In cooperative mode, you each have an Ancient, and so you have to kill both of them. And you can kind of work together. We'll come back to that in terms of what's happening. So we got to play both modes here, as well as I played a solo game of it to kind of learn. So you have a class, and you have a race card, and those are going to give you skills, and then you make a skill check, which is rolling a set of dice. So you look at your skill, and you look at your bonuses, and you're looking to roll, in the normal game, fives or sixes. We played on the beginner mode, so it was fours, fives, and sixes to get hit. So that very much reminds me of, like, Eldritch Horror. Have you played Eldritch Horror, Arkham Horror?
I think one time a long time ago.
There you go. So it's kind of got that same kind of skill check thing. We're not a fan of that. It's just tricky to say, roll this die and see what happens.
I didn't mind it.
Oh, you don't mind it so much. Oh, okay. All right. So I'm not as big a fan of that. So tell us your experience with kind of those skill checks.
Oh, well, I liked that you could work on building up your skills, and you could decide, like, which direction you're going. So there are four different skills. There's strength. I'm not going to remember all of them. There's sneak, and then
study.
Purple and blue.
Yeah, study and influence.
Yes, study and influence. So different assets that you will get would be allies or items or spells will add to various aspects of your skills. I like that.
Awesome. Now, one place I would totally agree with you was that sometimes you have to, like, scale a wall of a castle. So you're using your strength.
Yeah.
And you have all day. We haven't got to days yet. But you can roll multiple times till you get those successes. So it's kind of like you're learning about how to scale this wall or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, fights are a little bit different in that they're kind of like a single round or well, multiple rounds until there's somebody. But So I really like the idea of, like, hey, I could work on this and it takes action. So we should jump quick into a day. So in the game, there's 25 turns. It's lessened a little bit based on how hard or difficult it is. And a turn is a day. You have health. You start with 4 health and you have action points equal to your health. So you could spend an action point to move to another site, to attack, to approach a stranger, to try an activity, whatever it is, right? All these different things. So your health determines your action points, which is a little tricky if you get low on health, which happened to me when you get larger on health, because every time you complete a chapter of your story, you gain a health, so you get more actions. So we did have some turns where I had 2 actions and you had 7 actions.
That's true.
But you can take an action to heal and get health back, and there were definitely cards that came out that said heal to full or heal 2. So, you know, it was in there. There's kind of random draws when you go to a location. Like, if it's the Badlands, you draw from the Badlands deck and see what happens. Those kind of things. So you got these 25 turns to do what you're trying to do and get all these things done in a turn, and that's kind of the idea. So you're traveling around and, you know, looking for various things that you can find. Now, a part I really like is when you do pass a skill test, you get the card, and you can either keep the card if you need it, because a lot of your chapters require you to collect things like find a stranger, find some card from the plains, these kind of things. Or you may get to draw a card, like you can find an item and you find a sword, but you don't actually find the sword, you find the rumor of the sword. Oh, there's a sword over here in this location. That was awesome for me. I thought that theme was great. You know, that you just didn't have a goblin who dropped a giant sword this big enough for you, but you had to actually go find the sword. You heard about it, or you hear rumors of someone who would join you on your quest. That was really neat. So it did definitely make me feel like I was going on an adventure in terms of all those things. What did you feel about rumors and skill checks and days and all that stuff?
Yeah, no, I thought that was great. It definitely gave you something. I always felt like I knew what I needed to do next. So I knew that, oh, I need to get this title for to pass my next chapter. So I'm going to go to the places that have titles. Mm-hmm. Or I have this ally in my hand, this rumor of an ally in my hand that it would be really great for me. So I'm going to go to the location on this ally so then I can discover them and add them to my tableau on the table. So yeah, I liked that whole aspect of it a lot too.
Nice. So that's essentially what you're doing. I definitely agree. It like your story drove your actions. Like because of my story, this is what I'm going to do. So yes, I am kind of wandering around looking for things, but I'm going to certain places. And then this is telling me now go over here, now go over here. So that was really neat. There's other things to the game, like the loot bag, and you collect gold coins, and you can go to town, and you can heal, and all these kind of things. But I feel like in an adventure game, those are mostly, standard in terms of all that. Now, you also get deeds on cards, which give you like once per day effects that you could do. So you might be able to move diagonally, or you might be able to heal one. And those were pretty cool. That was neat to be like, oh, when do I want to use my once per day effect, or what could that be? And there's move versus relocate. So relocate, you don't have to draw a card when you get to the spot. So you were kind of safe in terms of all that. So yeah, overall, I think we found that fun. Now we did play the competitive mode, and you got a significant lead on me. I think you were on chapter 5 or completing chapter 5, and I was still on chapter 3. And then you just kind of ran to victory. You had more actions and all that kind of stuff. And then we thought, well, let's play co-op. But when we played co-op, the issue was if you completed your story again, you were ahead of me. I didn't complete my story, and it was hard for you to assist me in my story. So the co-op, then we had to kill two ancients, but then it was like you just had to wait around till I finished my story. And then, in fact, I think there was a day where you just swept all of your actions. Like, there's nothing for me to do. I'm just going to wait here till you're ready, right? And then we went and just slaughtered the two bosses. Like, we just took them out, no problem working together, because when you finally get to fight and use all your dice, it was not an issue. So we decided we really liked competitive better, because at least it was a race, and if you get ahead, you're going to win, and hey, that's how it goes. Whereas co-op was like, if you get ahead, then you just have to wait for me to catch up. Felt a little bit frustrated. So I wouldn't mind a better co-op idea, some way you could assist more. You give one die to the other player in their skill, and that didn't feel like much in terms of what you're trying to do. But that was it overall. Again, I could go through like negatives or things I don't typically like. Like, I don't like just rolling dice and seeing what happens. I don't like just drawing a card off of top of deck and seeing what I get. And all sorts of things like that. And just being behind in actions. But the entire package overall was great. We just absolutely loved this game. Like, we sat down and then we just were like, you want to play it 2 days later? Absolutely. Let's play it. Set it up and played it with no qualms.
I think one of the things about it, like, I've liked the game. I liked being able to pick my race and my class and figure out, oh, how do I want these to work together? And I had a clear objective of what I was trying to do. And I have tons of opportunities to grow and build and expand my skills and all this kind of things. There were like a couple things in both the games that just didn't seem to work, and I couldn't figure out if it was just something that we weren't skilled enough at the game yet, that we just hadn't figured out how to handle that, or if it was something that just didn't work for us in the game itself.
Yeah, there were times you could just die, like I was just dying.
Yeah,
And you don't get a lot, you lose a lot when you die.
So in the first game we played, I flipped over two really big monsters, my first two, 'cause you move into a space and it's a card flip that determines, oh, are you going to fight something or are you going to just, is it a quest or a stranger or something like that. So my first two explorations were both big monsters, and then I just died right away. And that's tricky to come back from, because again, like you said, you come back with only two health, which only gives you two actions. So it just takes a lot of focus to build your health back up, to get those actions back up, to then go on in the game. And I know you had trouble towards the end of that game when you were losing health, but by then I'd like finally gotten built back up, so then I was just so far ahead of you. So we ran into those kinds of snags in both games. So I don't know if that was just 'cause we didn't focus enough on our health, or if it was just, I don't
yeah,
know.
in the first game, it was like I got low on health, and then I tried to make it to the city, but the locations made me lose action points trying to get to the city. And then a weather card came out that said you lose a health at the end of every turn if you're not hidden, but I didn't have any actions to hide. Yeah. And if I spend my action to hide, then I don't gain any health, so I just sit there at neutral. So that was weird. But in the second game, I was able to kind of like work my way around that and recognize like, oh, I should hide or this should happen. Or I was able to find cards, like I said earlier, like, oh, if you complete this, you heal to full or you heal 2 health. And I could do those tasks. Yeah. So it was kind of interesting. It was also weird at the end of the game that you just fight the monster. Like right. You spend your whole game like, oh, I'll build up. Like, I think the first game I fought, I was like a were-tiger and I could get all this extra fight. No problem. I'm ready to fight. But then the second game, I was like a magician or I did all this study. So I had all this intelligence. And then it was like, well, use your 3 fight. So then I just had to go grab spells that fight, which is fine because it makes sense. Spells will fight and you could get there.
Yeah.
You are limited to 6 of those asset cards, but we both agreed you'd be way too powerful if you had more. So you start discarding a whole bunch and kind of finding your best rhythm. So it still worked, but it was funny to just suddenly switch over to like, okay, now you need fight no matter what you did all game.
Right.
You have to switch over. So it'd be neat to see like expansion bosses that allow you to, you know, you got to fight them with your magic or you got to sneak past them or something.
Yeah.
Or you just have to go and orate, you know, and influence them.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think there's a lot of story. You follow your own story, you know, it's generally interesting. Like you said, it guides you, which is really nice. Because in this game where you're just like, go to a space and see what happens, it's like roll and move, right?
Yeah.
But this was like, well, you're going to see what happens, but it's like on your adventure. You knew where you're trying to go, and you're just hoping you get there safely. So die rolls and random card draws are like what happens along the way in terms of all that. So overall, really liked it. I would definitely play it again. I'd be leery of teaching it to 3 new people. It says 4 on the box. I'd definitely drop that down to 2 or 3 for, like, first-time plays for people.
Yeah.
It was 45 minutes per player, and we ran to, like, 2.5 hours. So we were a little longer. But, again, learning, so could be a little faster. Awesome. Next up, Tang Garden. So Tang Garden's from Thundergriff Games, and it's going to be produced in North America by Lucky Duck Games, who sent us over a copy. And this is from Francesco Testini and Pierluca Zisi. So, Tang Garden is a very beautiful aesthetic game where you are trying to build up this garden and have visitors come see the garden and just relax in this serene environment. It's a very simple tile laying game. You have 4 stacks. You can either play a tile or you can draw from a deck of decorations, pick a card, and add a decoration. And the decorations are often 3D.
Mm-hmm.
So there's plastic pavilions and little bridges, and there's landscape tiles that slot into the edge of the board and stand vertically, perpendicular to the board. There are a few, there's trees, 3D trees.
Yep.
And then there's like a few like birds and peonies and lotus and, or lilies,
whatever
they are, yeah, that stand on the board. And then you get these visitors, and the visitors all have like a power that you get as long as you have them in front of you. And then when you gain a new visitor, you put one out on the board and they'll score end game points. Very, very simple game to grasp, but the strategy pushes its way towards a medium weight game. Like, that decisions are all numerical up and down. What should I do? If you have 4 tiles, you get to pick from those and you can only draw 2 decoration cards. But as tiles get drawn off the top, you don't flip those stacks. And now you can draw extra decoration cards. And then once you do, you reset those stacks. So it's kind of got this flow back and forth. And then I think one of the really nice elements is the 4 bonus tiles. You can flip 1, so you could play 2 tiles in a turn. 1, you could draft 2 cards. 1, you can move your person around kind of the board. That's it. But it's totally a game you have to see to play, right?
Yeah.
It's very visual, so a podcast doesn't do it as much justice. What were your feelings? What were your emotions? What were your thoughts on the game?
I like it. As is no shock to you if you've heard me on here before, but I like beautiful games with pleasant themes. And this is certainly that, your garden building and, just adding beautiful things, to the board. I like all the components. There's standees with the different colored bases and the little pagodas. I love all the details that are in all of that. I like the puzzle of figuring out. I have just a couple options, but some of them will open more things for me to be able to do, or what will give me the most points down the road. What option is the best of the options available to me right now? Because that will change. I liked it.
Yeah, it's a great game. I mean, the look, this game makes me so sad that there aren't conventions this year because people would see this game on a table and this game would be constantly played as soon as they saw it. And that's fine. You know, we don't have to have conventions, obviously, with coronavirus. We don't want to do all that stuff, but this game would be so popular. Because when as people see the game, they want to play the game. And then they get in and they realize, "Oh, it's so easy to start learning how to play. It's a family weight game to learn how to play." But then the strategy bumps itself up. I'm not going to go to Castles of Burgundy because
Not
there's like a
quite.
lot of interaction and like almost engine building in Castle Burgundy that this doesn't have. It's very straightforward. But kind of that you learn the game and it's here and then the strategy bumps up. So this would be great with families because I think, you know, not young kids, but kids could kind of grasp how to play and they'd have fun putting all the scenery in, and adults could be getting into it for like the strategy elements of the game. So, it's a great game. I've definitely seen this a lot on Twitter. I've seen people talking about this game, and it totally makes sense to me. I mean, Thundergriff and Lucky Duck, they've got a great game on their hands. I know they're planning expansions already, which would be interesting to see where those go because I feel like there's already a decent amount in here, and I like, you know, all of that. The insert is almost perfect. It's a little short of fitting everything well.
It's a puzzle to put it back in.
Yeah. But I think originally it was a Kickstarter. It had a second box, and some of those components would go in that second box. So kind
It
of what's
fits,
happened there.
though.
But whoo, it's a gorgeous game. It's more strategic than you would think from learning the rules, which is great. So yeah, Tang Garden. Awesome game. All right, that's our first two reviews. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back in a minute. Kathy, this time it's
Larry.
Larry, your co-host Larry is with us. We're gonna run through two reviews of games. So the first one is Skytear from PvP Geek. So Skytear is a MOBA, like heroes on a map game, but it's card driven. So you're building a deck. So we kind of like we saw a copy of this coming in the store, and then we were able to try that. We were able to get a copy from them to kind of do reviews so we could have this and also have it for sale and whatnot. And so we cracked this open kind of not knowing what it was. And what do you remember kind of from those initial couple plays there, Larry?
What I liked about it was the kind of blending of Minnie's game with deck building. Right, because it's just not a card-based combat game. It's actually you build freeform a deck of cards based on how many heroes you're playing, whether you're playing a three-hero, what is it, a four-hero scenario, or a five or six-hero based on two lanes or three lanes. And that was really interesting because the card play, every card does one, two, three things, right? So it's either in your deck as a flip for your dice roll, right, for your damage. Or it's symbols on the card for control that you play on a character face up for that turn. Or it's an ability that has a cost. So then you're looking at the cost of the card. And basically your mana that you have on a turn is based on what round you're on. So if you have this really cool three-cost card, you're not playing it to turn three.
Yeah.
But it might be a plus two on a flip. Or it might have two or three symbols for control. So that to me is where this game like kind of took me to another level where it's like I'm almost playing a CCG, right? I'm almost, or an LCG or whatever, because it's not collectible, but I really liked it. The The one thing I would be careful when people hear MOBA, I think they think that the minions just move an attack on a separate activation. And the minions in this game really just are control points. They're really, they're out there and they have a control for the tower. And really all you're doing with them is maybe using cards to kill some of them to gain more control or do something off of them. But the minions don't act on their own like in that Seamon Pirate game or other games like that that try to be a MOBA where the minions did stuff.
Yeah, I think kind of that piece that you just gave us was really where we realized, like, oh, there's more here to this game.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't just some game that a company produced and then they put it out and it's like, hey, if you like MOBAs, you might like this board game. But, like, there's a lot of thought. There's a lot. We found out a lot more as we, like, joined the email list and all those kind of things. So just backing up a little bit, you've got four heroes on a team. There's a two-lane side of the board, and there's a three-lane side of the board. We're going to mostly stick to the two-lane side.
I prefer the two-lane side,
yeah,
I think,
and that's
myself.
What you can play out of the box. So you've got a Nexus, and then you've got two towers. So the towers need one of the towers needs to be destroyed with 5 health, and then the Nexus opens up with 5 health. But in the two-lane side, you're not necessarily trying to destroy that Nexus. You're trying to win these objective cards. There's 3 objective cards, and they're like, kill it the same hero twice, or
kill two in a turn,
or breach the right side. And they change the game. Is this an attack game? Is this a control game? And I think the control is the big piece of the game that makes all the difference. Because, yes, you can build a deck and make an army, and you can run at the opponent and you can obliterate their heroes. You can hit their heroes very hard. But that might win you a battle, but not the war.
Right. And what's also important to mention, especially when you mention control, is that randomly you put down the towers and they're numbered. So tower 1 will trigger before tower 2.
Right.
The control for that tower, which could be the difference of winning and losing a game if you're pushing on tower 2 or you have some cool trick that's going to trigger at the end of the round on tower 2. If your opponent does something you don't see coming on tower 1, that happens first and that would trigger the win prior to the 2. And that you and I had one game that was interesting where that came into play, right? What was going to happen first or second. So, and I believe, not that we're playing it competitively yet, but there is a competitive league play, and the league play is designed at the 2 lane, if
yeah.
I understand correctly. So,
yep. So basically, you're like struggling over these lanes, and you're going to push this control token back and forth, and then your differential. So if I have 9 control and Larry has 4, I would have 5 damage points. I would kill any minions that are there first, and then I would deal damage to the towers to try to blow those
up. If the control point was near the tower.
Yeah, right. On turn 1, it just has to be pushed. It can't do
any
damage.
Right, it can't do any damage on turn 1.
So then, the other interesting part is the middle. So we talk about 2 lanes, but technically there's 3. The middle is what's called a dome. And a dome is, if you win control of that, you get to summon the Outsider, which in the base box is a pretty big mini. Now, obviously, there's a lot of very big minis being produced this day, but reasonably big mini. This big monster that comes out and just gets to do a bunch of damage. So it's an interesting idea that now there's these monsters, this outsider, that you could try to, like, sway control. Even though you're not winning the other part, could you use those to do extra
damage? Well, and in the two-lane game, one or two of the objectives to win the game has to do with the outsider, right? It's controlling the outsider tower 3 times, and there might be another one.
Yeah.
So, and think of the Outsider just as an NPC character you get to control for that turn, which is pretty cool. And again, I know we're just talking base game, but I mean, I like this game so much. I grabbed all the expansions right away, right?
Yeah.
Got all the different Outsiders, got all the extra heroes, played with deck building. And I mean, this game's solid. I really like it.
So you can tell we really like the game. I'm going to go over the stuff that I really like, and you can kind of tell me. But we should just give a couple points of, like, things that might be negatives. So first and foremost, I think it's still a battling game. So if you don't want to play, like, a battle duel style game, I think that thematically that's the main idea, right? So I tried to play this with Kathy, who likes, like, Euro strategy, and I thought, like, oh, the control points are, like, strategic, but I could also deal damage. But I think it still just feels like a battle game, like a CCG battle. So I think that's an element which I love.
I mean, if I was to call a negative to it, especially to the general populace, I don't think you're getting a complete game in the starter box, especially for two people. Because really, because of this, I'll call it LCG element, because of this deck building element, it's really not a game designed for me to say, hey, Brant, I have this cool game, let's play. And, oh, here's a deck I built, and here's heroes
I'm
I have.
I'm with you now, yeah.
Right, it really is a game where, even though it's a minis board game,
yeah,
it really is almost like, I don't want to say Magic the Gathering, but it's a game that I'm bringing my own stuff to. You're bringing your own stuff too,
yeah.
And we're playing.
Both players want to buy a starter box,
right,
is what you're saying. So, oh, you and a buddy decide to split the box, and now you're going to be able to play, and you totally could play at somebody's house, and you'd have a couple replayabilities, but it wouldn't be long before you'd be like, I want to own my own box.
Right. Make my own decks.
Right, that's maybe buy those expansions.
And trying different things. And try. Right. And that to me, it's not a negative for me. It's just, if I was to teach one of my friends this game, it would be fun, but they would not get that experience of building their deck.
Yeah. And,
right. I'd say, here's four heroes. Here's the deck that goes with them. Here's what you're trying to do. And I do that with LCGs, right? You build a deck for someone else to play. But once you get into a game and realize how good it is, it's a game to own. It's not a typical minis board game where it's like, I own this, can play with four or five friends, and they don't need anything.
Yeah.
Like, this really – and it's a minor negative, but it is – and the only other thing, and I mean, I hate to say this as a negative, but the base box is a great value. And I think that's what they're going with. And then the expansions tend to not be a great value.
Right.
Right? Like, they just, I think two expansions are more expensive than the base box, or it's close to it.
Which, again, is typical of collectible games.
Fair.
Right? So, like, that initial way, and that initial way to draw you in. I was going to say, my other negative is just that this game rewards repeated plays, which is awesome, but it's gonna create that barrier.
Oh yeah.
And we sat down and we just didn't even know what the game was, so we're trying to figure out, like, oh you can do this controlling, and oh, this controlling is important, or there's these three objectives,
and we accidentally won the first game.
Something happened, and we just didn't know necessarily. So you're just learning so much from plays, and you know, kind of sometime, especially in the board game market, like, three plays is a lot of a game.
Right.
But this is a game where, what are we now, 6, 7, 8 plays in,
right,
if
and
not
I
more.
I feel like there's still more to
and
learn.
And we've got so much more to learn. So, but once you get it down, I mean, we're playing games in 30 to 40 minutes. So,
right,
you know, it's not unreasonable. It's not like it's a 2-hour and 30-minute, you know,
right,
tabletop mini experience. It's much shorter
than
that.
And it sets up quickly.
Yep.
Especially if you're coming with your own stuff. So
Here we go through all the positives, because we did the negatives. So first off, the production value is top-notch. The minis are awesome. Yeah. The board, a little weird that you get, like, tokens, and, you know, they kind of slide around, but the way the design is to have all your health trackers, all that, the base box is an excellent deal. There's not a ton of replayability other than switch cards and switch armies, but if each player has a starter, it's an amazing deal for that. Then you could pick an army and go buy an expansion and run with those ones, you know, if you didn't.
And then I would buy the Outsider expansion, just because that gives you all the different Outsiders.
Yeah.
So you could create replayability just with different Outsiders,
yep,
right, instead of necessarily switching armies up. So
the community around the game is awesome, like, very, very positive. They're supporting it. They're doing tournaments. There's an online web builder, deck builder that they just did.
Kits
for store. Like, they went full in on the game.
Were they three-dimensional towers was in the first kit?
Yeah. You can get towers, and you can get figures you can see through, and you can get gold tokens for all the health. Like, just stuff you totally would want, right?
Right. Well, yeah, they're like chips. They're like almost like poker chips.
Yeah, poker chips or something. Yeah, that's what they were. So the support is there for the game, right, in terms of all that. They've done a great job with that. The game seems very well balanced. They're keeping up with it. Now, they did have to, like, ban a card or two, so you know you might want to keep up track of that. But obviously, if you're playing casually, it's not a big deal. But for tournaments, you're going to want to know that stuff and whatnot. But, I mean, yeah, the production of the game is awesome. And then the play, like I said, it's just so cool of, like, boy, I could fight you, but I could also try to just stay away from you and control all these elements and play all these spells. It's super clever, but yeah, it's a lot to wrap your head around.
It's interesting because I've played it enough now where I've tried what I would consider three different strategies, and I've had success with all three, but I like certain ones better, and certain ones give me a sense of more, like, I think controlling towers is a more steady way, especially in three lane, to try to push. In two lane, I feel like you got to go with a deck that's capable of killing, so you could be disruptive and you can kind of, I hate to say the word pivot, everyone's using pivot today with COVID-19 and all the stuff we're doing, but you could pivot on those three objectives, right? Now, if those three objectives come out, then you build your deck, different. But I would not play it that way because I'm going to have my deck already prepped.
Yeah.
So I'm going to come with a deck, we're going to flip out three objectives, and I'm going to go most of the objectives, if I have a kill team, for lack of a better term, I could probably organize around those objectives. Whereas if I have a control team, it might be harder, depending on what comes out.
And remember, for a real tournament, you make these little packets of eight cards to go with the hero. So, yeah, we have played where we just say, hey, show up with your four heroes in your deck. But that's us being a little more casual. But the other one, you'd have four heroes. So then you'd have that option, like, as you're drafting, what you want to do once you see those objectives. So that's kind of the official way of playing.
But we can both have the same hero, correct?
Yeah.
It's still me drafting from my own
heroes. Your own pool.
What do you, show up with six heroes and choose four?
Yep,
something
exactly.
like that.
Yeah, so and you have little packets of like eight cards. They all have an ultimate hero, spell, which is really exciting. You want to get that spell out. Yeah, just lots of stuff. So overall, a couple little negatives, which really aren't for me, but I could see them for other people. You know, in terms of that, like, hey, is this the style of game you want to get into? Is this the number of plays you want to get into? I think it's a big deal.
And I would say the only other negative, to go back to negatives, and I don't know that it's a major negative, is to your point, because it's a competitive game, they're errating and banning and doing some things differently, which to your point in a casual game might not matter. But there is that first player component.
Yeah.
Is it an advantage? Is it a disadvantage? So we're giving the first player one extra card, or we're giving them a free mana to play one card that's more expensive early game.
Right.
I'm not sure where I land on the balance of that.
But I'm glad that designers are on that, right? The publishers, and they're not saying, I don't know, here's the game, good luck, you figure it out.
But a casual gamer might get lost in that, where they might find playing with a friend at home like, God, whoever goes first is winning, or whoever's going first is losing, not knowing that there's modifications to what's in the base rule book for who's going first and what the benefit or the negative is to that as far as, you know, what you start with. So
overall, I'd give it a 9 out of 10. It's probably my favorite game so far this year. It's definitely the hidden gem of the year.
I mean, I didn't even hear about this.
Yeah, there was nothing. And turns out, it's just such a great game, and I really, really want to play it again. I'm really excited to get playing it again and whatnot.
Yeah,
so,
I think.
Love this game.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I think I give it an 8 out of the 10, and I think the only reason I'm a little lower on it is because it's harder to get to the table with people because of the deck building aspect, which I love the deck building aspect. It's probably my favorite part of the game because it does that hybrid. But other than you, I don't know that I could play with anybody and get the feel. And not that that's a negative, but
that's where I was taking it with the base box to say, here's your deck, here's my deck, and now we just play from what's in there, which is really smart on their part. It's exactly what you need to play.
And to me, if I play that a base box game, it's probably 7.5 out of 10, but when I own everything and if I'm going to tournaments and playing with people that are into it, it's like a 9+, right? But right now, just in the environment we're in, for me, I'm only going to be able to play it with you, you know, and it's just, and that's just a little bit of the barrier, whereas there's other games that, you know, I could own and go to anybody and be like, get a full play experience with just what I own.
So, awesome.
But I love it. It's a great game.
Skytear from PvP Geeks, check it out. And then our next game is probably one of the most popular games right now. It's a sequel or a prequel of a follow-up, I guess, to the number one game on Board Game Geek. So this is Gloomhaven Jaws of the Lion. Now, people who've listened to 150 episodes of the podcast, or at least the last like 60, 75, have heard Kathy and I just gushing about Gloomhaven. So there's no surprises. I love Gloomhaven. But I was super intrigued to get this one, try to play it with Zephyr, which hasn't happened yet. But I have gotten a chance to play it with Larry. And so this Gloomhaven Jaws of the Lion is intended to walk people through the game. So it kind of, here's a little bit, here's a little bit, here's a little bit, here's a little bit. Hey, now you're playing the whole game after five scenarios. And we've done that. We've done the five scenarios. We're working our way through. You're playing the Red Guard. So this isn't really my review. I give Gloomhaven a 10 out of 10. I give Jaws of the Lion a 10 out of 10. if I could go higher, I guess I would, because this is just, this is the game I've been waiting for, because I understand that mega box where people walked away, but now here's the like regular game size box, and it teaches you to play the game. It's like a 10.5 out of, I know that's silly, but you get my point. It's even better than the base box in terms of getting people to play, which is kind of one of my number one goals. Go ahead, Larry. Tell us about
if I can
Gloomhaven.
Give you the history. So I owned the original Gloomhaven, first edition, first came out. I believe I Kickstarted it. I got it early. Played it twice and gave it away. Right? So my wife's cousin, who I played it with, he liked it. I'm like, yeah, I can't take this. And my negative with Gloomhaven was huge box. Setup was a barrier, right? Setup was just a huge barrier with all the different map tiles and all the different cardboard. And if I have a box that big, you, for those of you who know me, I want big minis, and it's like going to be an hour experience with big minis on the table, and then I put it away, and next time I take it out, whatever. Whereas Gloomhaven, it was probably twice as long as some of the big minis games I have to take out and set up, and it was cardboard, cardboard, cardboard.
Yeah.
The gameplay seemed okay. I only played it twice, so I can't really. So now take me to this game. The first thing out of the box of this game that I love is that the map's in a book. Love it.
Yeah.
Right? Love it. And then I was a little disappointed initially where I said, man, imagine for other games if they had a bigger book so you could have bigger maps. And then lo and behold, I think it was on Mission 3, it turns out there's a second book with maps that connects to the first book with maps. And I'm like, there it is. I have a bigger map, right? So awesome. So the biggest barrier for me with Gloomhaven was setup and the amount of cardboard to store. This game has done away with that. There's one small tray of cardboard I'm looking at over there with some tokens and a couple of bags of cardboard standees for the minions. And you could fit their little kind of AI decks in with their tokens. So that part is gone. So now we get into the characters, which I love it, right? I love this idea of I have a combat deck, and as I get perks, I'm taking cards out or adding better cards. The experience is fine. But what's interesting to me is this, I have 10 cards, I play two, I do a top and bottom, and it's I don't want to call it a puzzle, but it becomes this like, you know, the fourth game we played where we were running low?
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, wait a minute, I only have at most 3 turns left if I take no damage, and I have to play a card and short rest and whatever. And that was cool. Like, that really played well. Not that it's a negative. I would say the story, from what I've seen so far, is kind of, the story's not pulling me fully in, right? There's something there, but I think I've been so excited to play the game that I've listened to the story, but I haven't, I hate to say just generic fantasy story, but, you know, there's nothing special to me about the story so far.
I'll jump in one spot. The one spot I love about the story is that it really is world building.
Right.
Because these are not trope fantasy characters. There are no goblins. There are no elves.
Right.
There are no dwarves. They're all unique races, and they're not even ripoffs. There's the Quattrall and the Inox, right? And the Volrath.
Right.
And I mean, there's humans, and Gloomhaven is just kind of this strange, off the beaten path city. Like, it's not this, you know, metropolis that they're doing. So I really do like that element. It feels like you're in like this dirty city with these really like vibrant.
I almost
style
feel though like I need
creatures.
I need a 5-page startup, right?
Yeah,
which I don't know that everyone would like that and read that, but to kind of get me into it, right?
Yeah, but I totally agree with you. But I also like, in regular Gloomhaven, when I go back, I'm like, yeah, I remember most of the story, I'm good.
Right.
I'm not like, oh, I need to start over because I forgot the story.
Right. And what I like about it is it's clever in the sense that, you know, wherever we leave off, if someone starts the game, they can come in at the level we're at, right?
Yeah.
Or the level the city's at, or however it works. And that's cool. That works for me. Yeah, I really like it. Would I like it more with more minis? Of course, because I'm a minis guy. But it doesn't really need it, especially the way you change them out.
And honestly, the standees with the numbers is way easier than minis with something that you had to mark them all
identify,
with.
Identify, right. Or then you're putting stuff on the map, which is cluttering the map. But I
right.
love the map. I love that everything you need is on the page with the map. At first, we thought the treasure was at the back of the map, which was annoying. Yeah, but we keep forgetting there's another book that has the treasure in the back. But yeah, no, I really like it. I'm trying to think if there's any real negative to me, and I really don't think there is. I would say for Gloomhaven Jaws of the Lion, if I would say a negative, and God forgive me, like I'm sorry, I know it was a great price point for what you're getting, but I feel like four heroes is light. I feel like in a game that plays four, I'm not asking for 20, right, that were in Gloomhaven, but maybe six or seven just to be like, hey, you know.
You can't. You've got to do
and
four.
And I get it.
You've got to do four or eight, right? Because you can't do six and then say two people get a new hero and the other two don't.
Well, when you retire a hero, you could take any class, right?
So you would just go play somebody else's hero.
Right, like someone else that retired Wander.
Yeah, you could do that.
But sure, if it's got to be eight, it's got to be eight. But for me, it's just, or even like, and maybe this is maybe they're doing this without me seeing it by choosing. So we just leveled up, and I got two level two cards, and I got to keep one and discard the other. Maybe what would make me a little more excited is if there was a clear, like, okay, for lack of a better term, you're a thief class, and if you choose these cards, you're going more to a
burglar,
and if you choose these cards, you're going more to an assassin, right?
Right.
And maybe that exists in the cards somewhat, but without guidance, I don't see that difference in the cards where I go, oh, I've been choosing all these kind of cards, right? But just for that little, right now, for me, if I owned Gloomhaven still, I would just bring a Gloomhaven character into this if I was sure. Ready to switch up characters. So.
And we don't know. I mean, we're 5 into 26.
Right.
So we don't know. And I mean, there's no doubt that this is trying to get you to say, like, oh, I really liked this.
Let me get Gloomhaven.
Let me go get Gloomhaven
and
back
get all
out.
All these
or
characters. Right, yeah.
I mean, it's, you know.
I will tell you,
that
playing this
past that barrier
makes me really interested and excited for Frosthaven.
Yeah.
It makes me kind of kick myself that I didn't kickstart it and wonder how I'm going to get it when it comes out and what I'm going to do, especially with conventions not existing in the near future. But,
Maybe Isaac will throw us a demo copy. Who knows? We'll be glad to review it and play a decent amount, you know, as we can.
And I kind of overlooked Frosthaven just because I had gotten rid of Gloomhaven just because of the overwhelming. It's kind of like Scythe. I love Scythe, but it's so hard to set up Scythe. It's so hard to store Scythe. It's right. And Gloomhaven was just worse than that with the cardboard and whatnot. So,
yeah.
But I love this game. This game, like, man, you know. You know, 9 out of 10.
Yeah.
You know, it's up there. It's definitely up there.
Yeah, these characters, until you play one of these characters and kind of get going with it, you don't realize how much strategic depth there is in your character, right? Like, there's so much and so many choices. And it's not just, it is play the top and bottom of a card, but when you got 10 cards in hand, or wait, should I go back and get the card I played 3 turns ago? Should I take a short rest now? And that decreases a card from my deck.
Right, but even like, okay, Brant did something I wasn't expecting, or something happened to change my turn. Okay, well, instead of doing the left top and the right bottom, just looking at my cards, I might flip-flop.
Right.
Or I might choose not to use the special part of that card, which is going to make me discard it or lose it at the end of the turn. Maybe I'll just use it for the base 2 attack or the base 2 move, get it back in my deck and use it as the more powerful version when it's needed. So I do like that, you know, you don't commit to the top and bottom when you play them.
Right.
You only commit to the initiative, which the whole initiative thing is a thing in and of itself. But now I have the swapping the top and the bottoms or using their base versions of the generic twos if something got messed up in my plan. So there's a lot of thought here. It's not
it's incredible.
That simple. I will say, and maybe this has just been a little bad luck on my part, I will say I like the idea of your house rule that you talked about. I almost would get rid of the times twos and the misses.
It's not my house rule. It's an official variant.
Oh, it is? Okay. I didn't realize that's an official variant.
Which is you toss those and they're plus zeros instead.
I kind of think I might like that better. I don't ever want to miss.
Yep.
I'm okay drawing a minus one, a zero, a minus two, but a full miss, especially on my big card that gets discarded after I use it, Yeah. Kind of hurts me. Yeah. Kind of makes me feel...
And it's funny because I remember drawing a lot of misses at some point and getting frustrated with that. But I haven't drawn a miss in any of these five games. I'm playing Gloomhaven and with Kathy in three or four of those. Yeah. So suddenly I'm on like a 9-game streak where I haven't drawn a miss. So I just forget about it. You know what I mean? But yeah, I don't think it's ridiculous to do that.
Yeah.
You know, to just make those zeros. And it still makes your deck like, okay, I just do what I expected to do.
Right. You can still pull a minus one, a minus two, which...
Yeah, yeah.
At least then when you're doing your big 7 or 8 attack, you're not missing. It's just lessened.
And it's amazing this deck, which is basically like your die roll, right? Every time that I teach somebody or talk, like they get to this part and they're like, wait, I get to change this deck. Right. They're so excited about that, equally excited about that as to like getting new cards to play with.
Yeah.
Because like I get to decide how I want this to be. And that's kind of your class play. But I do agree. There's no doubt Isaac left it open. Like, you could be a burglar assassin. Like, you dabble in burglaring, but you're really an assassin. But you're really heavy on this. And he totally went for that, which is interesting.
And for anyone
he didn't want to define it, you know?
Right. And for anyone out there who did not play, who hasn't played Gloomhaven and doesn't, you know all the details, the one thing I will say about this cooperative game that I don't think any other game does as well, even an app-driven game, and I like some of the app-driven dungeon crawls and games like this, I love the AI of the deck. It's simple.
Eight cards.
There's cultists that are on the board. They have an 8-card deck. You shuffle it. You flip a card over. It tells you their move bonus for that turn, if they move at all, their attack bonus, if they attack at all, and there might be a symbol to reshuffle the deck because they don't want it to be static. It's perfect.
Yeah.
And it has an initiative value on it, and they're all different. So there's some fast, some slow. So you can't know in advance like exactly what they're going to. That might be maybe not the best part of the game, but having played a lot of co-ops with a lot of sometimes confusing or sometimes just, you know, fidgety AIs that you got to like, oh, well, should he move here? Should he do this? Should she do that? Should she do... This is easy, man. You flip it. How about the golems on that turn where we're like, we were in trouble, and then we flipped the card where the golems did nothing this turn except if anyone attacks them, they take 3 damage. And we're like, oh, that actually helped
us this turn. Yeah.
This was
we needed a turn.
But it wasn't like a bad card for the golems to have because if we were, it basically kept us from attacking them because we would have killed ourselves.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that was in there, right? Like, and that's the other thing about a game like this. I don't want to take this deck of Chaos Demons and look through the 8 initiative cards and know what their options are.
Right.
I want to shuffle it up and see what happens. So maybe if I see Chaos Demons 3 times, I'll have a sense.
Yeah, that's the idea.
But
like,
I'm not memorizing
I can tell you, like,
they
deal a lot of range damage. Or, they're going to move really quick. Like, I start to remember this is kind of what they do.
But you don't remember, they have a 41.
Yeah.
So if you're going to play a card, try to play under 4, right? Like that.
I can't remember all that. So,
yeah,
so
but no, I think this is solid.
So the only other thing I would wonder is, I mean, I essentially taught you the game.
Yep.
And you were saying like, oh, I don't know that I would play one without you. So do you have a sense of how this book did? I guess you don't really have a sense of that. You have a sense of how it was layered for you, right, to be taught.
Correct.
But it feels like, I mean, the first one was too easy, but you just needed it to just visualize.
Having played 2 games of the original Gloomhaven and having read that rule book myself to learn the game, which I'm not great at doing, I like how they layered it. I don't know that, I mean, again, we're gamers and we do this a lot. I don't know that I needed 5 games of an intro, 3
right.
probably, but I did like separating the these
element
tokens.
Yeah.
Bringing that in as the last element of the learn. Because when this was part of the initial learn, this just everything got thrown off, right? So that was good. But again, I think 3 for an experienced gamer was probably plenty. Of course, you could teach me the game without the layering, but the layering is great. But if the purpose of this game was to show people that Gloomhaven's a great game, and that you should go out and get it, or you can get it off your shelves and try it. Or even if it's as simple as, hey, we know Gloomhaven original is too big for you, or too daunting, or too much of a setup, so we're going to give you a similar experience, cheaper price point, quicker setup, quicker play. Here you go. They hit their mark.
Yeah.
They hit their mark.
Right. It's It's showing you that, like, Gloomhaven is a game you can play.
Correct.
As opposed to, like, Gloomhaven's a barrier you have to cross, and then you'll be one of these people that knows Gloomhaven's a great game.
Right, right. Absolutely.
Awesome. We will end there for episode 153. So thanks so much for listening, everybody. Just a big review episode. But until next time, I'm your host, The Brant.
Was Kathy, but now I'm Larry.
I was going to say on behalf of Kathy. until next time, we hope you step into the pool.